I'm going to call in order the Elections Finance and Government Operations Committee and Representative Lee.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I have reviewed the minutes and I move the minutes from March 10th, 2025.
Any discussion on the minutes? Seeing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Nay. Minutes are approved. We will start out with Representative Nash. And if the testifiers want to get in position behind the testifiers' table. And I would move that House File 2105 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the State Government Committee. Is that your understanding as author?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I believe that's where we're headed next.
Thank you. Are there, I didn't see any amendments. There are no.
Mr. Chair, I have no amendments. I did not see any that posted in your committee from other members. So with your indulgence, I can start. Thanks, Mr. Chair and members. House File 2105 is being brought on behalf of Minnesota Government Relations Council, or as many of us know them, MGRC. It's a professional association representing lobbyists and government relations professionals. In 2023, the legislature expanded the definition of lobbying, changing who is defined as a lobbyist and the activities that they undertake that require registration. And I understand that the intent was to improve transparency, and the result of which, though, has been confusion and uncertainty about compliance requirements for a great many people in our communities that we all serve. Since the law passed, MGRC has worked very closely with the Campaign Finance Board, and they've tried to help interpret the new law and provide guidance to the members. However, despite these efforts, further statutory clarification is needed. And that's what this bill is all about. 2105 provides necessary clarity while maintaining the integrity of lobbying disclosure laws and ensuring alignment with the core First Amendment principles. I have a testifier that will help clarify some of the more technical details, and that's Amy Wallstein. She is the Vice President of MGRC, so if she could come forward and help us out.
Please introduce yourself and go ahead with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Nash. We appreciate your attention to this legislation and working with us on it. For the record, my name is Amy Wallstein. I'm here today representing the 626 members of the Minnesota Governmental Relations Council. MGRC members are government relations professionals and lobbyists that you see up here every day. We're dedicated to ethical representation, and we strongly support transparency related to the work that we do, and we advocate for clear lobbying regulations. Since the expansion of Minnesota's lobbying registration laws in 2023, MGRC members, including contract lobbyists, nonprofit leaders, attorneys, and subject matter experts such as engineers, have repeatedly raised concerns about the impact of the new law on who must register and for what activities. House File 2105 offers clarity and distinguishes between professional lobbyists and citizens engaging with their government while maintaining strong transparency requirements. A couple things that we'd like to highlight in the bill: the threshold for registration. The current threshold for lobbyist registration is $3,000 in compensation. We currently require anyone who's paid more than $3,000 annually for lobbying activities to register, regardless of how little actual lobbying they perform. This standard blurs the critical line between a professional lobbyist and an ordinary citizen or volunteer advocate. We have heard directly from our members that this lack of distinction discourages ordinary citizens, nonprofit volunteers, and subject matter experts from interacting with public officials out of fear of inadvertently violating this threshold. To address this, House File 2105 proposes adding a clear 10-hour monthly threshold to the existing financial criteria, so it would be both and. This combined financial and hourly standard is widely used in other states and offers a practical, measurable approach, ensuring only those who are regularly and professionally engaged in lobbying must register. We also find that we've heard from our members that clarifying registration requirements for subject matter experts is truly important. Since the 2023 changes, significant confusion remains about who must register as a lobbyist, especially among subject matter experts and nonprofit volunteers. Despite many attempts at clarification, we have continued to receive substantial feedback from our members that professionals remain uncertain and confused. So 2105 proposes specific common sense updates exempting the following individuals from registration. Those include individuals whose job responsibilities do not include lobbying, who have not been asked to lobby and do not receive any pay for lobbying. Individuals advocating solely for their own interests unless they otherwise exceed the registration thresholds. Volunteer board members who do not receive compensation specifically for lobbying. For example, I'm on the Serve Minnesota board, was appointed by Governor Walz, but I do not conduct lobbying activities for them. They're paid lobbyists do. So I do not register unless Jeff now tells me that I should. Subject matter experts, you've heard a lot about this, and you'll have some more information from additional testifiers. But these are people who provide factual information and are not advocating. Those people are not doing direct advocacy. They are giving professional recommendations, particularly to local officials. So to be clear, if and when any of the people I'm talking about, employees, volunteers, engineers, are asked to lobby, conduct lobbying activities, or communicate with the public or local officials in a manner that is a communication attempting to influence legislation, then of course they should register. We're just talking about the people who are not directly advocating. And then the last thing I'll talk about is the expansion of political subdivisions. That's been one of the most challenging aspects of the 2023 law changes, is trying to understand what the expansion to all political subdivisions has meant. It's a broad expansion. It's led to a lot of confusion and complexity. Our members have noted significant difficulty determining what constitutes an official action at the local level and identifying who qualifies as a local official. 2105 addresses these issues by clarifying that merely providing professional information or expert testimony does not constitute lobbying. I'll note that the lobbying community has worked diligently over the last 2 years to get this language right. And I'm pointing to subdivision 14 in the bill. We've collaborated closely with stakeholders and policymakers, reflecting broad input from professionals across Minnesota, including Eric from ACEC, who's going to be here to talk more about that in a few minutes. So despite ongoing efforts from the campaign finance to clarify these rules through advisory opinions and rulemaking study groups, we're still confused. And that's what we're trying to clarify in this education, or in this bill today. So we urge you to help us with this definition, accept what we have put forward on this, work with us to make sure that it is clear. So in conclusion, MGRC strongly urges passage of 2105. It's balanced, necessary reform that clarifies lobbying regulations, protects free speech, and ensures transparency without discouraging participation. Thank you for your time and consideration. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. And is this Mr. Cassidy? Please introduce yourself and begin your testimony.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman. My name is Paul Cassidy. I'm with the Stinson Law Firm, and I'm a member of the Minnesota Government Relations Council. I represent multiple clients across various sectors in Minnesota. I'm testifying today in support of Representative Nash's bill to offer a practical perspective on how recent expansions to lobbyist registration have impacted the organizations and professions that I represent. Since the law changed in 2023, my clients, ranging from nonprofits to small and large businesses alike, local professional firms and subject matter experts, have consistently struggled with uncertainty and compliance complexities relating to the 2023 law. While MGRC fully supports transparency, the expansive nature of these new rules and legislation has unintentionally created confusion, hesitancy, and burdensome compliance concerns among our clients. For example, engineers who historically provided critical technical input on public projects, I'll give some examples of something you're dealing with right now. Let's talk about big data centers, for instance, infrastructure improvements in large transportation projects, now fear that simply delivering factual information or professional assessments may trigger a lobbying registration requirement. Similarly, community members who previously participated in routine meetings with city councils, county boards, or legislative committees to inform officials of community needs now hesitate, concerned they'll unintentionally violate ambiguous lobbying requirements and trigger registration. Additionally, small organizations have faced challenges when volunteer board members or pro bono professionals meet with policymakers or participate in advocacy days at the state capitol. The uncertainty about whether these civil engagements now require lobbyist registration has had a chilling effect, discouraging vital community participation in our government. These unintended consequences directly undermine public participation and limit valuable informed communication between our clients and policymakers. House File 2105 addresses these real-world issues by clarifying that sharing professional expertise, volunteering, and routine engagement with policymakers do not inherently constitute lobbying, thereby protecting the First Amendment rights of citizens while maintaining the transparency the law intends. House File 2105 provides the essential clarity necessary to allow my clients and many others like them to confidently engage with their government. MGRC and the broader lobbying community have worked diligently to refine this language, striking an appropriate balance between transparency and constitutional protections. We urge you to support House File 2105 and help ensure that Minnesota's lobbying regulations remain clear, fair, and effective. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'd be happy to field questions after the next testifier.
Thank you. And would the next one be Mr. Lake? And I also see a Eric Heiberg. Okay, so we have two more testifiers. Please introduce yourself and proceed.
All right, thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Brian Lake. I have a solo practice law firm in Minneapolis, and I represent the Minnesota State Bar Association. For those of you who may not know, the bar is a voluntary organization that represents about 13,000 attorneys throughout the state. And I just wanted to say first, just as someone who's worked in this business for a long time and a long-time MGRC member, I really appreciate all the work that has gone into this bill, all the people who have put in many hours, and I appreciate Representative Nash's leadership. I think this is a really fair and balanced bill overall that deals with some pretty nuanced and complex issues that have been causing a lot of trouble. I want to talk specifically about Section 2 of the bill, which is important to the Bar Association, and we'd urge you to support, and that deals with lobbying at the political subdivision level. And that's really important to attorneys because they're often interacting with local government bodies on a wide variety of issues. And sometimes those activities, I think, fall within what people traditionally think of as lobbying, and sometimes they don't. And Section 2 was crafted after a lot of thought and discussion about how to fairly draw that dividing line between what constitutes lobbying and should require registration and what shouldn't. And I think what that section really does is highlight a key difference between what you all do in the legislature and what local government officials do. You all are always in legislative mode, meaning you're always creating policies that are forward-looking, that take effect at a certain point in the future, and then courts take those statutes that you create and that you modify, and then the courts apply them to the specific individual circumstances in the cases that they hear. Local government bodies also have a legislative function like you do, where they're creating prospective policies to take effect in the future. But one difference is they also at times operate in what's called a quasi-judicial capacity, where they are applying existing policies to specific fact situations that are in front of them. So think of things like zoning violations or requests for like a variance or different types of zoning or land use issues. Now, depending on which mode the local government body is operating in, there is different appeal path that follows that. So generally, when the local government body makes a legislative decision, a policy-making decision, those can get appealed to the district court. But when the local government body makes a quasi-judicial decision, those are generally appealed to the Court of Appeals. And this really illustrates how, in those situations, when the local government body is exercising their court-like function, they're really standing in the shoes of the district court. So it's a very different type of decision-making process. So what Section 2 of the bill does is it provides an exemption when political subdivisions are acting in this court-like capacity, this quasi-judicial capacity, and it carves out situations where they are applying or administering an existing statute, rule, or ordinance. And it's just to boil it down, it would still require lobbyist registration when attorneys and other advocates are interacting with local government bodies when they're in their policy-making capacity, but not when they're in their court-like functions. And I want to note that this is not, you know, a radical new concept. Multiple states have similar exemptions. And more importantly, it's consistent with current Minnesota law. So what Section 2 does is it modifies Minnesota Chapter 10A.01 Subdivision 26B, which is the definition of official action of a political subdivision. And I mentioned that carve-out for when the political subdivision is applying an existing policy. That concept is borrowed from a separate subdivision, Subdivision 2 in that same statute, which is the definition of administrative action by executive branch agencies, boards, and commissions. That definition includes when those executive branch bodies are adopting, amending, or repealing a rule, but with a handful of exceptions, it specifically excludes when they are applying or administering existing rules. So what we're essentially doing here in Subdivision 26B is taking that same concept, taking that same dividing line between making policies and applying policies that already is in current law for executive branch bodies, and we're applying that to political subdivisions. It's basically setting it up so there is a consistent treatment of lobbyist registration across all levels of government. We think that is a common sense approach that will preserve transparency, continue to require lobbyist registration where it should be required without creating any unnecessary burdens. So with that, Mr. Chair, I appreciate the committee's time and consideration and happy to answer questions.
I did have one clarification. So you're basically saying that billable hours only count during that policy creation mode?
Yes, I think that's the correct interpretation, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. The next testifier is Mr. Hagberg. And please introduce yourself and begin your testimony.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair. My name is Eric Hagberg. I'm with the law firm of Healy Duncan Melander, and I'm here on behalf of ACEC Minnesota, which is the American Council of Engineering Companies. We have over 125 firms and 7,500 employees that practice consulting engineering in the state of Minnesota. And we have interest in this bill to try and clarify when and if the members of the engineering community would need to register as lobbyists. We're particularly interested in Subdivision 14 that's in the current statute. Engineers have continued and very important contact with local officials on a regular basis in doing their jobs. And we think it's in the best interest of both the state, the local governments, and the citizens that they are able to continue those discussions and contacts with the local officials without having to worry about registering as a lobbyist. There's three particular things I want to talk to you about. First one is a number of cities around the state aren't big enough or don't have enough budget to have a full-time on-staff city engineer. So they hire engineering companies to act as their city engineer. And we're concerned that the way the statute is currently written, those people acting as a city engineer may be considered lobbyists when they advocate on behalf of a project or make opinions and give facts relating to a project in front of the city council. So we'd like to see that corrected. Second, engineering companies are often hired directly by these local entities. And as the firm working on behalf of a city or a school district, they are often advocating on behalf of certain things on that project and answering questions from city council members about the project and working with the city engineer on that project to make sure that it meets the codes and it meets the interests of what the city is doing. Again, we're worried that if the language in the current bill persists, that they would have to register as lobbyists. We do not think that's the intent, but that's the way the language reads. Finally, engineers are often hired by developers or neighboring property owners to help develop a project, and they have to have a continued and ongoing discussion with the city engineer, with the code officials, and with the city council or school board to discuss what's going on, make sure that the project is code compliant, and make sure that both the city and the developer's needs are met. Again, we're concerned that if the changes are not made in this bill, that we will be in a position where those may be considered lobbying. We've worked directly with the campaign finance board and Jeff to try and deal with these and through the regulatory process. But the Campaign Finance Board has determined that legislative action is probably necessary based upon the language of the statute. And so we ask for your consideration of this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Heiberg. Did the author have any statement after the testifiers for clarifying on the bill?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Just very briefly, I've spoken to a number of people from my district, and I would imagine you've heard from some of yours as well. I had an ACEC day on my calendar. I think it was Day on the Hill. I forget when it is, but that got canceled. And some of the people that I've known for years who are engineers, at least in Carver County, said we're not coming up to visit because we feel that this may eventually lead us to where we're going to have to register as a lobbyist. I would use other examples. There are a number of coalitions that get created to advocate for things like Highway 5 in Carver County or other highway projects. And the fear that they have, Mr. Chair and members, is that by continual advocacy that they have, that they've been doing for years to say, hey, Representative Nash, make sure we get this highway built, or they come and talk to some of you, or they spend time on the phone, that they have a great fear that they're going to now have to register as a lobbyist. And if that were to become true, I can also only posit that Mr. Sigurdsson and his organization would have to then have a tremendous amount of back office work to manage registered lobbyists who are people who are just trying to advocate for a project getting across the line, like an engineer, or in the other parts of Subdivision 14. You see a lot of the other professions that are in there are people that we interact with on a regular basis down here that will call up and spend time. And if they advocate for longer than a handful of hours per year, they're going to, by the language of the existing statute, have to register as a lobbyist. I don't think that was the intent of the author who wrote that bill. And I hope that we can find a solution in this very common sense approach to that. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Representative Coulter.
Excuse me. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, first of all, to clarify, I was the author of this original bill in 2023, and then some of the clarification that we made in 2024. And I want to start off, first of all, by thanking folks who have engaged me in the conversation in the past. I am eager to continue that conversation at any time. Curious, though, Representative Nash, obviously you have the testifiers here. Were there other folks that you consulted with on this bill beyond beyond MGRC, the bar, and this professional organization?
The author.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Coulter, yes, I have had other folks that have approached me. People, again, as I'd said, there's a Southwest Transportation Alliance that is in my area. Some concerns have been brought to my attention from them. This particular gentleman didn't, but I will use him as an example. There's a gentleman that has been on that particular alliance, I think, since roads were first invented, and he has been advocating for the expansion of Highway 5 for a very long time. He is just a citizen, and yet he spends an amazing amount of time advocating for that. Based on how we're looking at this, he would have to register to be a lobbyist. And that's the concern. And we're looking for clarifying language, Representative Coulter. And I would hope that, recognizing that there are some problems and some hurdles, that we could get to a point where we could all come together and say that this is an important step.
Representative Coulter.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I will say at the outset as well that I have a bill coming shortly that will address some of the clarifications that I agree are needed, and as well as some of the other recommendations. So one of the things that we did last year was require the Campaign Finance Board to conduct a study. And the study specifically focused on lobbying at the local level, lobbying of political subdivisions. And I happen to have it right here. And there are a small number of recommendations from this study that was conducted by the Campaign Finance Board included in this bill, but not others. And some things that were brought forward to the board that the board either chose not to comment on or chose to reject. So I'm curious kind of where specifically the recommendations in this bill came from.
The author.
Mr. Chair, I'll let Ms. Wallstein address some of those concerns.
Ms. Wallstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Coulter. The Minnesota Government Relations Council surveyed our members. Well, the
study group was in process of doing their work. And we submitted testimony and testified in person during those sessions. What the recommendations coming forward out of that study group said was there was a few things that they saw were outside of their jurisdiction or their charge with that report, including the hourly threshold that we've been advocating for, taking a look at the federal definition that was outside of the scope as well. And I think what we heard, you know, post recommendations from our members, that they still don't have the clarity from the recommendations that the Campaign Finance Board was putting forward. Jeff can speak more to this if you want to hear from him directly. But they're proposing a new schedule that lists all of our expert witnesses. That doesn't quite get us to the answer that we're seeking of what activities, who has to register for what activities, and at what threshold. So it's not to the full extent that we're seeking, so that we can be in compliance and that we've identified that appropriate threshold for lobbying versus technical expertise.
Representative Coulter.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and that is helpful. I think it's worth reviewing the current definition of what a lobbyist is. And I, you know, first of all, most importantly, I mean, number one, right in current law says that they are engaged for pay or other consideration of more than $3,000 from all sources in any year. So I just want to be really clear here that members of the general public, volunteers who show up, who are not getting paid to advocate, are not lobbyists. And I have to say as well, and I'm going to try and control myself a little bit, but the conflation of lobbying with folks' free speech rights as codified in the First Amendment is, I think, just incredibly in poor taste. The second piece here is that in order to be a lobbyist, you have to get paid more than $3,000 for attempting to influence legislative or administrative action or the official action of a political subdivision by communicating with public or local officials. You have to attempt to influence this action. Just listening to committees and walking around does not make one a lobbyist. So when you are a lobbyist, then what happens? You have to register. You have to fill out, I think, a 2-to-3-page form. It's not a particularly high bar. I know some folks don't like filling out paperwork, but it is most certainly not something that infringes on a constitutional right. And I want to focus here on that $3,000 mark here, because that does not mean that someone who makes more than $3,000 a year and also may spend some time lobbying has to register as a lobbyist. That means the time that you spend lobbying, if that adds up to more than $3,000 in 1 year, then you have to register. So somebody who makes, say, $100,000 a year would have to lobby, engage in what is legally defined as lobbying, for more than, assuming a 40-hour work week, for more than 60 hours. If someone is spending more than 60 hours actually lobbying and they're making $100,000 a year, that seems to me like they're a lobbyist. So just to sort of clarify that piece of it. And now, you know, to the actual bill, I'm going to try and keep things brief a bit here. I think the more than 10 hours in a month piece is problematic. That basically means someone can lobby for 8 hours a week and not have to register. If we look at line 3.1.
Representative Coulter,
yes,
8 hours in a week and 10 hours in a month. If you do, the math doesn't quite. So am I misunderstanding what you're saying, Representative Coulter?
I may have missed it. I thought it was 10 hours a month in a 3-month period, but I may have misspoken there. So I may have misstated that piece. I'll cop to that. But if we look at line 3.4, an individual whose job responsibilities do not include lobbying, but who has not been directed or requested to lobby on an issue by their employer, would not have to be considered a lobbyist. So some ambitious executive at Amazon who isn't told by Jeff Bezos, who just wants to go lobby for fun, wouldn't have to register. Line 3.11, an individual serving on the board. So someone on the board at Facebook who, you know, Mark Zuckerberg walks up to him and said, boy, wouldn't it be great if someone talked to the Minnesota legislature about data centers? They wouldn't have to register as a lobbyist. And I'm glad, you know, we brought up the quasi-judicial decisions piece. Those of us who come from the world of local government, who served on city council, served as mayors, know what kind of decisions those are. And sometimes, yes, they are zoning and land use decisions. They're also local licensing decisions. We recently heard a bill related to licensing of massage, or not licensing, but related to local licensing of massage therapists. And they're often decisions related to expansion of developments. And one example from my days on the city council, we have I believe it's a data center in Bloomington that was going to expand. And the question before the city council was, would that exceed current state rules on noise ordinances? Now, that's an issue that was of significant interest to our community. A lot of folks wanted to know what was going to happen with that. A lot of folks lived nearby and felt that it was too loud already. If this bill were to become law, anyone paid to lobby the city council on that decision would not have to register as a lobbyist. And so I'm forced to wonder, who is this bill for? I have not heard anyone in all of the door knocking that I've done, in all the conversations that I have with folks back at home, I have not heard anyone tell me that they feel like lobbyists have too little access. I have not heard anyone say that big corporations and the wealthy are too powerless, because folks know that money equals power and access. More of one gets you more of the other. This bill would tilt the law in that direction even more. And frankly, it fits a pattern that we've seen. We just heard not too long ago Representative Torkelson's constitutional amendment that would allow lobbyists to be part of drawing legislative districts. That bill has now been through four committees, and that is still in the bill. And just today, I was reading about how in Washington,
Representative Coulter,
I'm almost done, sir. Okay. I'm almost done. How in Washington, President Trump is gutting the Public Integrity Unit that goes after corruption of public officials.
And Representative Coulter and all members, we don't have jurisdiction over the federal government, so we should try and focus on these bills
I'm there.
Okay. Pardon me. Representative Davis,
go through the chair. That's inappropriate.
And so now we have this bill before us. And there are some things in this report that I think are worth putting into law, some things that do need to be clarified, some recommendations that I think would address a lot of the concerns that have been raised here, including what information the public really needs to know and what information the public wants to know. And as I said, I'm going to have a bill to put those in place very soon. But the effect of this bill would be to cloud even more the extent of influence that big corporations and wealthy executives have in our government right now. And I want to be clear here. I am not saying that good and honorable people cannot be lobbyists. I am not saying that good and honorable organizations cannot hire lobbyists. We just need to know who they are. The CEO of Health Partners, her office is right in my district. She makes $3.1 million a year. That's roughly $1,500 an hour. If she wants to spend 2 hours telling us how to vote, she can do that. We just need to know. When folks get paid to lobby, when they profit from influencing our government, Minnesotans have a right to know. Thank you.
I don't know if I heard any really question there, but the author, did you want to respond?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'll just say that when I went to several local events in my city and was walking through one of the neighborhoods where several of the consulting engineers live in Waconia, they said that they were concerned about this. So, Representative Coulter, they do get paid more than $3,000, and they are now going to have to be forced to be a lobbyist. So I would reject your premise that paradigm that you just said doesn't exist. And I did go door knocking, and I did talk to them. So, you know, if you heard from ACEC that this is one of their great concerns, and that for somebody who is paid to help shepherd a project along, which I think is probably a pretty good definition of that, they would have to lobby, or they'd have to register as a lobbyist under the paradigm of your previous language. So, Mr. Chair, I believe that Ms. Wallstein had some comments in retort.
Ms. Wallstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Coulter, just a few clarifications as we look at where this came from and why. Minnesota Government Relations Council, we've been in existence for 35 years, and we represent those of us who feel like lobbying is an honorable profession. We see ourselves as people who are conduits of information between our clients, between the public, and legislators. We see ourselves as helpers. So what we're trying to do is make sure that what we do as professional lobbyists is fully understood, is transparent to you. What we are doing as professional advocates is reported and to the Campaign Finance Board. What we're trying to better understand is how some of these changes that were made in 2023 all work together. So, Representative Coulter, you had a bill that changed who must register to include political subdivision, local units of government beyond the metropolitan. Part of the 2023 law also changed what we must register for. So it included drafting prospective legislation, which is something that was unclear kind of in our community before that happened. So as these things started to come together, we fielded so many questions. We had webinars with Mr. Sigurdsson. We had conversations with the breadth of lobbyists who are up here whose clients are confused. So that's where this is coming from. This is grassroots from the lobbying community. We're not taking direction from big interests. This is our community, our local lobbying community that has brought this forward. As to the hourly threshold, Minnesota used to have an hourly threshold, so it was a both and. It was 5 hours and $250. So what we're looking to do is kind of bring it back to a both and threshold. So, and if it's not 10 hours, we can work on that language, but what we're looking to do is to not disadvantage people who make more, such as some really technical lawyers, one of whom I worked with last year on a really complicated Uniform Law Commission issue. We only got about 2 hours of his time before he hit his threshold. As opposed to, you know, maybe a law clerk who doesn't make very much, we just don't think that kind of speech should be constrained by what a person's salary is. So that's one of the reasons that we've been looking at that. Subdivision 3 on the 20%, that's been an attempt to capture the federal definition of lobbying. We worked with nonpartisan staff on that. We're not sure we're there yet. We don't think that we have fully been able to bring in the federal definition of lobbying, conform with the federal definition of lobbying. We'd like to continue to work on that. And I know others do as well. As we go into Section 1, Subdivision 21, 11, 12, 13, those are pieces that have been brought forward from the rules that were just passed, conversations during the rulemaking committee, clarifications that we feel are better suited in statute than in the rules. And then Subdivision 14, as we talked about, is the piece where we're attempting to figure out that line. And we started down the path of looking at folks who have professional licensure, certification, recognized expertise. So these are people who are truly experts and have professional certifications, and that's what we're trying to do with that language. And the other piece we haven't talked about, Subdivision 10, confidential and privileged communications, that came up during the working group. Attorneys are concerned that they might have to report something that would violate attorney-client privilege. So, in all, what we're trying to do is bring forward a bill that clarifies, and we're happy to continue to work with members of the legislature, with the Campaign Finance Board, and with our membership so that everybody understands and we're on the same page with what you desire, what's transparent, what's fair, and which doesn't overly burden people who are just here to advocate like on their own and are not professional lobbyists.
Well, thank you for that. And I hadn't realized until this discussion that it's not someone paying you to speak, but if you just happen to make X amount of dollars average an hour, well, that is exactly the thing that the representative next to you was saying, is that a person that he brought up Zuckerberg and making a lot of money, they would only be able to do X number of hours because they're effectively per rate of hour talking. We should not be discriminating the local voice of the constituents of the local government being able to speak and saying, we're going to let you have X amount of time depending on what you make a year. So, you know, maybe I'm misinterpreting what the legislator was saying, but it certainly seemed that way for clarification. And Representative Lee. Representative Lee, did you want to?
I guess I wasn't sure if Rep. Coulter wanted to respond to that. Okay.
He does not have the
floor. Mr. Chair.
Representative Lee, did you have a question or not?
I did. I'll yield to Rep. Greenman.
Okay, so Representative Lee doesn't have a question. Representative Greenman.
Thank you. I just wanted to, I think, clarify something, and that I don't want to butt in, but I think it would be helpful maybe to have board chair or the board executive director, Sigurdsson, clarify if you, because I think the point of disagreement is if you are advocating at the Capitol but not being paid for it but happen to make over $3,000 a year, are you or are you not a lobbyist? That was the question that...
Representative Greenman, a lot of the discussion was local government plus legislative intent, and clarifying legislative intent is a huge piece of what the campaign finance board head person would be deciding, is interpreting the legislation with the legislative intent. If we have questioning and discussion in the legislature that leads to a certain interpretation, then it's reasonable to think that those that would be trying to do the law according to legislative intent may pull off of that. That is why I wanted to get clarification that it appears as we're uniform, that we cannot limit the time based on what a person earns in their normal livelihood when they're talking to a local government about a local issue. And I just wanted that on the record so that we made sure no one did a sort of thing of, oh, you can't speak anymore because you make too much money. But did you have a regular question that you wanted? Because you were on the list after Representative Lee.
Sure. Okay.
Representative Lee, you do have a question now?
Yes. Well, I wanted to make sure that we answered this question in that discussion because I had that question as well. I have two questions, actually. I had my previous question, but I mean, I imagine we can give Mr. Sigurdsson time to come and answer your question, Mr. Chair.
I'm not seeing a... If Mr. Sigurdsson wanted to speak, but I didn't want him in the middle of the legislative back and forth. Mr. Sigurdsson.
Mr. Chair, committee members, Jeff Sigurdsson, Campaign Finance and Public Disclosure Board. I think the question that I heard was if you're, for example, the executive director of a nonprofit, and you have many duties, but one of those duties is to also represent your nonprofit at the legislature on particular issues, relative to your nonprofit, then that person may be required to register as a lobbyist if the amount of time that they spend at the legislature times their salary takes them over $3,000. So there are individuals who need to register as a lobbyist, even though their activities are not exclusive, their job description is more than just lobbying, if that was the question.
Mr. Sigurdsson, what about when you have local government and you have people coming to talk to the local government, if they end up being paid a large salary, and it's a salary, not an hourly, could there be an interpretation that would then limit the amount of hours they could speak and without registering?
Mr. Chair, there's sort of two parts to that question. The first is, I think the issue that you raised, is a highly compensated individual going to hit $3,000 sooner than someone who's paid less? And the answer is yes. I think that's clear. The second, though, is to emphasize that as part of this bill pulls out, and as indicated by the testifiers, part of this bill is, in fact, administrative rules that were adopted by the board and was trying to provide clarification that an individual who is not there at the request or as a requirement of their employment, but who are simply there to express their opinion, those individuals are not being compensated for that time, and therefore they would not need to register. Then you go back to the standard of if they're spending over $3,000 of their personal funds supporting their lobbying efforts by, you know, printing off white papers or doing something like that. So there are some citizen lobbyists, but generally it's only going to require registration when they are compensated over $3,000.
Thank you for that clarification. Representative Nash, did you have closing remarks?
Wait, Mr. Chair, I said I had two questions.
Representative Lee.
And Rep. Greenman was on the list after me. Remember.
Okay, it'd be nice if you could get on the list, and if you're on the list and I call on you,
yes,
then take your turn. Yep. Representative Lee.
Yep. So thank you, Mr. Sigerson. My second question, which I started out earlier, and apologies, Chair. I mean, I know there's a lot of chatter today, and thank you for giving me the second question. So we just talked about, you know, this $3,000 threshold. Is there a time limit that limits the amount of time a lobbyist can spend on the Capitol? Mr. Sigerson.
Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, Representative, no, there's no time limit currently in the definition.
Representative Lee.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so I just close by saying, I mean, I represent District 67A. It's one of the poorest districts in the state. My constituents work 2 to 3 jobs. They work weekends. When they come to the Hill, I make an effort to meet with them all the time because they don't know the decisions that we make here, which affect them all the time. And I'm emotional because these people cannot pay for lobbyists to come and do things that make devalue their lives and you know, make it harder for them to survive. And so I go back to Rep. Holter's comments earlier that actually, you know, we were all texting. It's really disingenuous to make anyone believe if they have the chance to watch this that their First Amendment rights are being deterred. There is no First Amendment right to lobby, but when you come here, you know, we want to see that. And, you know, I want to make sure folks know you can register to lobby and talk as much as you want, as long as members are willing to meet with them. And so I just want to make that point very clearly, and this is why I'd also request a roll call vote on this bill. Thank you.
My understanding is that this bill has nothing to do with how many hours a registered lobbyist can lobby. This bill has to do how many hours a citizen can come before local or state government to speak and then have to be registered as a lobbyist. That's my interpretation, is that this bill is about how do you, the requirements for registering to be a lobbyist. Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I didn't mean to skip the line. I just thought it would be helpful. I think that there was some point of confusion. So next time I will maybe just send you a note. I really didn't mean to skip the line ahead of Representative Lee. And I know that you're trying to get us along. I know we have other bills. So maybe I will just, I had a few questions, but maybe I'll just leave it to comments. And where is this bill going, Mr. Chair?
The motion was made to state government.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So just to step back, because we've had this conversation, we had this the last couple years, we've had this now, and it's easy to be shaped by the regulated party, which in this case is lobbyists, people being paid to advocate on a specific issue for labor rights or corporate rights or environmental rights or whatever it is. But What lobbying rules are really about is public transparency, that voters and the public understand who is trying to influence all of us, or in this case, who is trying to influence city council folks, planning boards, folks who are spending tens, hundreds, millions, in some cases, of dollars of public money. And that's what the reason we have lobbying registration. It does not restrict anyone's ability to get paid to advocate for an issue. What it does do is say, if you're being paid over $3,000 a year directly to communicate with decision makers about what they're making decisions on, the public has a right to know that. And so when I look at this bill, the thing that is actually most concerning about it, I think Representative Coulter touched on it, is lines 3.15 to 3.19 that would create a loophole for some of the wealthiest. They may be experts in the businesses they own, but it would create a loophole for CEOs, for wealthy executive directors, or whoever it is. Because what I know in my community, when I talk to folks, is I don't have a lot of millionaires in my district. Most folks make, you know, $70,000, $100,000. And if you make $100,000, you have to be paid to be directly talking to elected officials or the decision makers 60 hours. That's 60 hours of direct communication. It does not include sitting in a committee. It does not include writing memos. It includes the direct influence of legislators or decision makers. And so, yes, if you make $1 million, you can get there quickly, get there in 3 hours. If you're Elon Musk, you will get there in minutes. But frankly, folks who are making $1 million, or if you're Elon Musk, you have a lot more power than that person in my district who makes $100,000 a year. And so I'm not hearing from those folks who make $100,000 a year. And what I think is a problem here is that we hear a lot about confusion, and this is happening in other committees on other bills. We hear there's a lot of confusion, but this is not clarifying. It's carving out. It's carving out some of the people who have the most influence. And voters are telling us that they want us to be listening to them. Communities, and I know you guys are hearing it too, we are all hearing it. Communities want to make sure that what we are doing here is for them, is listening to them. And then we get here, and they wonder, are you just listening to lobbyists? Are you just listening to the folks who can pay to have somebody pay over $3,000 to have somebody here? Because the folks who came to me yesterday on the insurance day, they spent 15 minutes with me. It's going to take a long, long time of those 15-minute meetings to get to a place, even if they did get paid, and I hope they did. It's going to take, 100, 150 hours. And so I think we shouldn't be doing a bill that carves folks out. I will say that the campaign finance board process that I sat through this summer, MGRC was there, lobbyists were there, a bunch of self-interested companies, and I don't say that negatively, because people who are interested in how this affects them absolutely should be at the table. But we also heard from local elected officials who said, in an environment I saw pressure placed on myself and my peers by individuals paid to influence policy and decisions related to billions of dollars spent by local governments in the state of Minnesota. These are folks, architects, lawyers, who would be carved out by this bill. We heard voters say exactly what I just voiced, and they weren't here today testifying for this bill. We heard lobbyists. And the last thing I will say, the two last things, I guess, is, one, you talk about the federal definition. We always, our colleagues across the aisle, every time we bring up the federal, what's happening at the federal level, we get laughs and eye rolls, and we're only talking about what we're doing here. But you're trying to import the federal definition into Minnesota law. It is not working at the federal level. Nobody says lobbyists have too little influence in Washington. I've never heard that. And so in Minnesota, we should do what we do best, which is grassroots government, where lawmakers are responsive to their public. And the last thing I will say is it's peculiar that when we have a bill about lobbyists, written by the lobbyists for lobbyists, with or influenced by, I don't know if they wrote it themselves, Representative Nash, you may have written it, but when we have a bill written by the lobbyists for lobbyists, it feels peculiar to say lobbyists as if it's a bad word, as if making somebody register is a bad word. I heard you say, and I agree with you, that lobbyists, the folks who are up here, are advocates. They're advocates for their clients. They may be advocates for business interests, but they also may be advocates for a domestic violence shelter. The only thing registering doing, and we have not heard it is hard to register. I just had meetings this morning with MGRC, and they said it's not a hard thing to register. So then it's like, what is this shame about people having to disclose that they're talking to lawmakers? And that is, I think, where the nut of my opposition, I think my caucus's opposition is this feels like it makes our rules less transparent. It doesn't make them less confusing. It just carves folks out. There is work to do, and I appreciate the work that both the Campaign Finance Board did in their decision, in their recommendations, which are not in here. But when we talk about regulating lobbying, we should have a bill that isn't just written by and for lobbyists. So with that, members, I'd oppose this bill and think we get serious about the Campaign Finance Board recommendations that they did over many months, listening to all of the stakeholders, not just ones that carve out lobbyists or CEOs from our lobbying rules.
I didn't hear any questions to the author.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'll just say I'm never told by people what to write in a bill, and you know that, so let's not go there. But I will say that this bill is really to clarify some things so that people who are trying to be that local voice of influence, let's just say that they're trying to influence a Highway 5 project or a bridge project or a number of other policy changes that they might bring. And I just want to clarify, we're not Washington. We are not. We have no jurisdiction over Washington. And so we drop in references to prominent people who are in the news, but we are not trying to give billionaires, like perhaps somebody, Hans-Jörg Wies, who funds a lot of things on the other side of the aisle from me. We're trying to make clarification for people who are, quite honestly, sometimes our neighbors. I have neighbors who are engineers, and they are concerned about this. That's the genesis of me bringing this bill. I have people who are in some of the other professional trades, and they have concerns. That's the genesis of me bringing this bill. I don't get told by anybody what to do. So I think, Mr. Chair, that Ms. Wallstein had some questions, had some clarifications, and then hopefully we can be done.
We do have one more. Representative Freiberg is on the list, but Ms. Wallstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. One thing that I do want to point out is, yes, this is being brought by the lobbyists. We are a regulated party. We are the only regulated party in Minnesota, to my knowledge, that does not have a seat on our regulatory board. We've got language for that. You know, we'd love a seat on the regulatory board so that we can inform those members of what we do and why they why sometimes they don't quite understand what they're regulating. The other thing is that I'd like to point out is there are things that come with registering as a lobbyist that have the implication or that have the potential to limit speech. Lobbying is political speech. It does have First Amendment implications, and the government must have a compelling interest in narrowly tailored restrictions on speech. What lobbyists have to do when they register is also adhere to a gift ban. We have to watch our political contributions, and political contributions are limited in terms of what you can take from a lobbyist. So I just wanted to point out that there are things that come with registering as a lobbyist that are beyond just filling out paperwork. The paperwork's easy, but there are things that could inhibit speech for regular citizens who are then counted as lobbyists. Thank you.
Representative Freiberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a couple comments to close, and then I don't expect the other two bills on the agenda to take quite this amount of time, so I appreciate the robust discussion you've let happen here. So just to the testifier's point, you know, lobbying is a protected activity under the First Amendment, but one of the things that's been found consistently to be constitutional is regulations of it that relate to transparency, and registration. As we heard from Representative Greenman, those are not onerous processes, and those do have a value to the public, just to know who is attempting to influence their elected officials. I just wanted to bring us back to the process that the Campaign Finance Board followed. I thought it was a good process that got input from all sides. I don't think this bill represents that process very well. On the expert exclusion, for example, I know that is in this bill. I know at the Campaign Finance Board, Clean Elections and Common Cause testified in opposition to that. They noted it could inappropriately allow significant interests to operate without transparency or accountability. And transparency for the public certainly outweighs a little additional paperwork, was what they said, which is, you know, consistent with what Representative Greenman said. The time as a calculation was also specifically addressed by the Campaign Finance Board. And I just wanted to read their conclusion. So the Campaign Finance Board said, however, that, you know, they noted that it was used in some other states, but then they said, I'm just quoting here, however, the time components vary significantly by state and are not always clear. And in some cases, the definitions referenced by the MGRC may be broader than Minnesota's definition. These examples illustrate the complexity involved in adding a component to the definition of the term lobbyist regarding the time spent lobbying or an individual's job duties. Moreover, it is questionable whether the examples referenced by the MGRC provide a threshold that is easier to track than $3,000 in compensation for lobbying in a calendar year. So I'm not saying the language as is perfect. You know, we can certainly keep working on it, but I don't think this bill is really quite ready yet. So I guess maybe next week I'll actually have a vote, but at this point all I can do is kind of say what I think, and then not have my name called when the roll call comes. So that's where I'm at.
Thank you, Representative Freiberg. And there were many of us who didn't think we had a voice or a vote that counted previously when, you know, the bill that is in law now, it was a fact. But the author, please give your closing.
I got the let's landless airplane look from the chair. So, members, thanks for the discussion. This bill really is designed to clarify and give protection to the people who are our neighbors. I don't think that I can't imagine why we would be opposed to something like that. But thank you, Mr. Chair, for your indulgence, and I will ask for member support. And I guess you get to make to reiterate my needs on the pathway of this bill, since I am not a member of the committee.
And with that, we'll renew the motion that House File 2105 be recommended to pass and be referred to the State Government Committee. And please take the roll.
Chair Quam?
Yes.
Vice Chair Altendorf?
Yes.
Representative Acomb?
No.
Representative Coulter?
No.
Representative Davis?
Aye.
Representative Gordon?
Yes.
Representative Greenman?
No.
Representative Lee?
No.
Representative McDonald?
Yes.
Representative Roach?
Yes.
Representative Vernig?
No.
There being 6 ayes and 5 nays, the bill is passed and on to the next committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. The author, Representative Zelizdekar, and there's a testifier. If the testifier could, thank you. Representative McDonald.
Oh, well, while she's getting ready, I just wanted to note for the record that Representative Freiberg did not go through the chair when he was reprimanding Representative Davis, just for the record.
I heard that, and I also heard that Representative McDonald is moving that House File 1723 be recommended to pass and referred to the General Registry.
That is correct. That is my motion. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And the author can proceed with the introduction of the bill. Would the author proceed with the presenting of your bill?
Thank you, Chair Quam and members. There is an amendment. I'd like to offer Amendment A1.
Okay. In order to get the bill in the form that the author wishes, I move that the A1 amendment. Please, to your amendment.
Thank you, Chair Quam and members. This is a bipartisan, non-controversial, simple bill. I promise, something you've all been waiting for today. So this is a topic that only affects St. Louis County, and it is basically language cleanup and clarification to deal with the times we are in today in 2025. So I'm going to defer to the testifier.
Please introduce yourself for the record and present your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Jim Gottschild. I'm a deputy county administrator for St. Louis County. I'm testifying in support of House File 1723 as amended, which proposes very limited technical changes to Chapter 383C, as Representative Zeleznikar presented, is a statute that is very specific to one county in the state of Minnesota. And so the good news is any amendments made to this statute don't have an effect on any other county in Minnesota or other local unit of government. The first proposed change is to line 2.2 in your handout. We are requesting to strike the word two, T-W-O. This is a section that references the unclassified service. So part of 383C is the St. Louis County has a classified employment system. There is a number of positions that are carved out of the classified service. We refer to them as the part of the unclassified service. And we would like to have line 2.12 reference a county administrator and deputy administrator. So we don't have a specific number listed in that statute.
Okay. And any questions on the amendment? Seeing none, all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. The amendment has been adopted. Author, to your bill.
Thank you, Chair and members. As I promised, this is a simple cleanup verbiage bill. So thank you for your time today.
Okay. The first three legislators asking questions actually is zero. Anyone have a question? Anyone in the audience wish to testify? Seeing none, then all in favor. Well, did you have an additional closing? Okay. I then would have Representative McDonald renew the motion to adopt House File 1723 as amended and be recommended to pass and be referred to the General Registry. All in favor, aye. Opposed, nay. The bill passes.
Thank you.
And the next bill author, Representative Altendorf. And I see there's a testifier signed up. If you could proceed to the testifier's table. And author, please introduce your bill.
Thank you, Chair Quam. I move that HF 1840 be recommended to pass and be referred to the Human Services Committee.
And my understanding is you have a DE?
Yes, thank you very much. I do have, it's the DE2 amendment in your packets, if you can find that. And I want to thank our expert House researcher, Mr. Gearing. He helped us get this bill into the condition that we think it needed to be in. This amendment, basically what it's doing is it's not such a broad reach, and then now it is just only including the facilities, the residents of a person committed to a secure treatment facility as a sexual psychopathic personality or as a sexually dangerous person under Chapter 253D. It's the person's last known residential address prior to issuance of the committed order. So with this amendment, basically, what it's doing is it's clearing up the language so that it wouldn't encompass other people who might be committed for mental health reasons. So it's only very, very specific to people that fall into that category of sexual psychopathic personality.
Are there any questions to the amendment? And that Lead Freiberg and I had a short discussion about this because it was, you know, the timing of it, but I don't see any questions. So all in favor of the amendment to put the bill in the author's preferred form, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. The bill is amended. Any further clarification?
Thank you, Chair Quam. I just basically to explain with the passing in the last year of allowing the felons to vote, what this bill does is just cleaning up because I think it was a kind of unintended consequence that anyone who's in the Minnesota Sex Offender Program, so they are civilly committed. However, they're not serving their term. They're civilly committed because they are deemed to be dangerous for society. And so what happens in a couple of areas of Moose Lake and St. Peter, we have larger populations of people that are in this civilly committed area. And all this bill do is that their vote would go to the address of which they are from. And I think this just makes a lot of sense, especially last year, it was Representative Abadje's bill, HF 4043, that passed through four committees, and it's doing this exact same thing. It's allocate an incarcerated person to their last known residential address for the purpose of redistricting. So it's exactly the same thing that we're trying to achieve here. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any questions? Seeing none, all in favor, I'm sorry, we've got to, author's got a testifier. So if you want to testify, please give your name and testimony.
Yes, Mr. Chair, members, Representative Altendorf. Hello, my name is Doug Juntinen. As a former mayor of Barnum, a 20-year law enforcement veteran who served with the St. Paul Police Department and Carleton County Sheriff's Office and current city council member, for the past decade, I want to thank you for considering HF 1840. This last election I ran for mayor of Moose Lake. As most mayoral elections, the individuals who vote, they live in the city, purchase goods and services, and pay property taxes. Unlike other communities, the clients at the Minnesota Sex Offender Program are also allowed to vote in our local elections. From the taxpaying citizens at Moose Lake, I received 295 votes, which is two dozen more than my opponent, who received 271. These votes were from individuals who voted in person at the polls and through early voting at the Carleton County Courthouse. 566 votes were cast in total. The clients at the Minnesota Sex Offender Program are allowed to vote more than 50 days prior to the election, as well as the week of the election, when the election officials come to that facility. Typically, there are 175 approximate client votes at MSOP. All votes cast at this facility are mail-in ballots. With the recent passing of the mentioned 2023 bill, which allows individuals with certain felonies to vote, this increased the MSOP total votes to 255 this past election. My opponent received 143 of those votes. This was 31 more votes than I received. These votes were from individuals that have no vested interest in the community of Moose Lake. And these votes do not reflect the wishes of the taxpaying citizens of Moose Lake. This significantly altered the outcome of the Moose Lake mayoral election in 2024. MSOP is a closed facility. Clients are temporarily housed there, and they are sent from counties all over Minnesota. In fact, all of these clients are recognized by the counties who sent them as belonging to that specific county. These civil court proceedings or cases are held in the individual's county of origin, not in Carlton County. When released to halfway homes, these clients are returned to the county of their origin. It is in those counties where these clients have a sense of belonging and have a support network of friends and family. That is their home. In recent years, clients at MSOP tried to become eligible to vote or to be candidates in our local elections. There was public outcry by the citizens of Moose Lake, which resulted in clients not being allowed to run for these elected positions. Now imagine your own community with its unique financial needs, including challenges with infrastructure, road projects, parks, sewer treatment facilities, police and fire needs, etc. I ask you this question. Would you want someone from outside of your city or town who was not elected by the taxpaying citizens to be your mayor, your representative, your dignitary, the one who creates the vision for your city and determines how to allocate your budget? Likely not. Nor would you want clients from a facility to have the ability to alter your individual city's election results. This is what happened in 2024 at the city of Moose Lake. HF 1840 will direct the votes to the appropriate jurisdiction where clients have a vested interest in their own communities. I ask that you look at the issue from this lens. MSOP clients should cast votes in the same geographical area from which they were sent. They are the cities and counties from which they are already vested. They are not vested in Carlton County, nor are they vested in the city of Moose Lake. As Jim Rohn said, if you really want to do something, you will find a way. If you don't, you will find an excuse. Thank you. My name is Doug Gentlenen, and I would appreciate your support of HF 1840, and I'll be happy to answer any questions you have for me.
Thank you, Representative Freiberg.
Kind of a closing comment. I don't know if there's anyone else testifying or anything, or should I could just.
I believe most of the people have left for the Shamrock Shakes.
Yes.
Not everybody had theirs delivered. Representative Freiberg.
Thank you. So thank you, Representative Altendorf, for bringing this bill forward. And thank you for mentioning Representative Egbadje's prison gerrymandering bill. I think one of Representative Egbadje's points on that bill apply here as well. I mean, that bill dealt with accounting for census purposes. This bill deals with voting. So there are some distinctions there, but I think kind of the general principles are the same. I mean, those committed individuals were members of specific communities when they were incarcerated, as are the individuals in these facilities. And presumably they're going to return to those communities, and presumably they are not connected to the place where they are currently living. So they don't have any tie to the facility location where they haven't lived and probably will leave after their commitment ends. So I think this bill's consistent with what we've passed before, and I'm happy to move it along. If I had a vote, I would move it along to the next committee. I'll be glad not to have to say that anymore.
Any other? And author, do you have a rebuttal to the hostile?
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Chair Freiberg. I appreciate your support, and as I said, it's a common sense, just a little bit of a cleanup bill, and I appreciate all of you. So with that, I'll move HF 1840 as amended to the Human Services Committee.
All in favor, aye. All opposed, nay. And it passes. With that, we are adjourned.
Thank you.
Enjoy your